Our final case today is Diaz against Prudential Insurance Company. Mr. Dubofsky.
Good morning. Happy New Year. May it please the court. The ERISA law, according to the Supreme Court's decision in Black & Decker versus Nord, was enacted to protect employee benefits and that it imposes rights and responsibilities on the parties, which include the right to procedures affording a full and fair review of claims, non-adversarial treatment of claimants by plan fiduciaries, and a plenary district court review unless the plan unequivocally reserves discretion.
Mr. Dubofsky, my question for you about the standard of review aspect of this case is really what difference you think it would make. Prudential does, in fact, provide reasons for its denial of the benefits. And even on a de novo review, that doesn't mean that you just randomly throw out what the plan has done. There's a certain amount of, you know, balancing of medical evidence and so forth that goes on. And I'm not positive that this is the case where standard of review is going to make the difference.
I think standard of review always makes a difference, Your Honor.
No, but not if we think not if we would come to the same result anyway, whether it was deferential or de novo.
It depends which result the court would come to, of course.
Well, let's assume for the moment that on a deferential standard of review, Prudential prevails. I realize, you know, you're making the other argument. I'm not saying that's the ultimate conclusion, but if that were the case, that's certainly the result the district court came to. If you didn't think it made any difference, then you would, what you would need to do, I suppose, is convince us what is there in the record on the standard of review that you would like, that you think should have been applied, that would have allowed your client to prevail.
Well, I think fundamentally, Your Honor, by having a de novo or a plenary standard of review, it changes the entire process that the district court
right,
applies.
Right, but what evidence, now suppose you're back in the district court, you got your de novo standard of review, what is going to cause your client to win?
What's going to cause Mr. Diaz to win is an unequivocal record from the treating physicians, the Social Security determination.
If you think it's all unequivocal, then the standard of review doesn't matter, right? For the standard of review to matter, one has to assume you're going to lose on one and win on the other. And I understood the question to be, what would cause you to lose on one and win on the other?
Fair enough. We've argued that the standard of review, in our briefs, we argued that the standard of review really doesn't matter because the plaintiff should win either way.
Right, but, you know, maybe there's a better way to
assume for the sake of argument that is not persuasive. Then could you form an argument?
You know, for example, you mentioned the medical record, and there are some unequivocal things in the medical record, but they include the fact that the surgery seemed to be healing from a physical point of view just fine, and all sorts of doctors were alerting Mr. Diaz to the fact that he might have a dependency on these very strong painkillers that he needed to address, and that there was fundamentally nothing wrong with him other than the sometimes difficult process of handling that kind of a problem.
Well, I think that's Prudential's view of the evidence.
Well, there is evidence that says that. There are plenty of doctor's reports that say exactly that.
But we have to look at the evidence in its totality.
All right, and so now we come back to what Judge Easterbrook was saying. There's Prudential's evidence that says what I just described. What evidence would you be presenting that would say, no, even though the back surgery had healed properly, in fact, he still is so disabled that he should get the long-term disability benefits?
Well, I think the problem with the question, Your Honor, is that the evidence is not that the back surgery healed Mr. Diaz completely. Dr. Ahn's opinion consistently, starting a few months after the surgery when it was evident that Mr. Diaz was still in excruciating pain, indicated in his reports that Mr. Diaz was experiencing pain from multiple sources, including soft tissue or the site of the surgery. You've got
maybe we're talking about two different things. The actual surgical procedure, you know, the bones healed and the body parts that had been manipulated during the surgery were healing. Everybody says they were healing. Now, was he still experiencing pain? Absolutely may have been. You know, we know that pain can be subjective. It's sometimes difficult to correlate it to a particular physical condition. I have no problem with that. But if that's your argument, it's not really because the surgery didn't heal. It's just because the surgery, for whatever reason, didn't address the pain.
That's correct. And the fact that the surgery may have been technically successful did not restore Mr. Diaz to functionality. Before the surgery, Mr. Diaz's primary complaint was pain. After the surgery, his primary complaint was pain. There's all sorts of corroborative evidence in the file, particularly if you look at the physical therapy records, which show muscle spasms, increased nerve tone, antalgic gait, range of motion impairment, all of which Dr. Brown, Prudential's doctor, said were not there. And he used that as the basis for his opinion, when in fact all of that evidence was in the record. All of that evidence was credited by the neutral, objective Social Security Administration in awarding benefits.
So you're saying that's the kind of evidence, if the standard of review had allowed the district court to delve into the record more deeply, that might have led it to the opposite. Might not have, but might have led it to the opposite conclusion.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That plus the fact of Dr. Brown's obvious bias. We cited case after case in which Dr. Brown has been retained by the insurance companies and has consistently given an opinion that the claimant is disabled. Here we have the very curious circumstance of Dr. Brown saying, okay, I agree that Mr. Diaz was disabled from the time he had the surgery until August 5th, 2002, which miraculously is the date that benefits were scheduled to begin, when in fact there is nothing in the record to show that there was any improvement in Mr. Diaz's condition at that time. And in fact, everything shows that things got worse. He was in the emergency room less than a month later. He had 3 epidural steroid injections. These are not the type of thing that somebody would do just because of opioid addiction. As this court pointed out in the Carradine case, which is a better example of a pain case than even the Hawkins case, that these types of activities are indicative that somebody's pain is legitimate. And in fact, this insurance policy contains provisions providing that if somebody is disabled because of their pain, they're entitled to benefits.
Isn't it more limited benefits?
Albeit for a lesser duration of payment.
Right.
I will reserve the rest of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Grabowski. Ms. Rothman.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Rebecca Rothman, and I represent the Appley Prudential Insurance Company. The district court correctly applied an arbitrary and capricious standard of review.
Ms. Rothman, I have a question, though. I mean, the district court plucked this satisfactory to Prudential language out of a context that's quite different from the context in which it appears in the Donato case, for example. The full sentence reads, "We may request that you send proof of continuing disability, satisfactory to Prudential, indicating that you are under the regular care of a doctor." Now, in Donato, it just said you have to give us proof or satisfactory proof of your claim. This is just one of many, many elements of eligibility for disability benefits that has this language. And otherwise, it looks an awful lot to me more like the Hertzberger line, where there are objective criteria. If the only thing that has to be satisfactory to Prudential is something indicating you are under the regular care of a doctor, this would be a significant expansion beyond Donato in a direction where Hertzberger suggests Donato is kind of the floor. So I'm concerned about consistency with our law.
Well, Judge, the phrase that you focus on, that indicating that you are under the regular care of a doctor, I don't think that makes the the plan language ambiguous or...
Well, what I'm saying is that modifies what is it that has to be satisfactory to Prudential. One thing that satisfactory to Prudential language doesn't appear earlier on in this policy, as the district court correctly recognized, when you know, the disability language is defined to begin with.
Correct. I think the way that the appropriate way to read the phrase is that it requires that the claimant submit proof of continuous disability satisfactory to Prudential that indicates, that also indicates that you're under the regular care of a doctor.
But that's not what it says. It says, comma, indicating that you are under the regular care of a doctor. It doesn't, you know, if there'd been a period after satisfactory to Prudential and no last clause, then I would agree. Maybe it looks a lot more like Donato, but here's a whole sentence that we need to read. And the district, apparently you didn't even argue this in the district court. The district judge found this one on his own. And so that leads me to my question for you. Does it make a difference to you if we are under de novo review or if we are under arbitrary and capricious review?
I believe that the decision should be upheld under either review. I think there's enough in the record that demonstrates that Prudential's determination of benefits was more than reasonable and was the proper determination. You have
The problem I have with the proposition that the evidence is enough under de novo review is that that decision should be made first by the district judge, should it not? The de novo review issue also affects the contents of the record. If we're dealing with arbitrary and capricious review, the district court has to proceed on the administrative record. If we're dealing with de novo review, the record can be made in the district court and may differ from what was in the administrative record. So if indeed the review should be plenary, it seems to me we need a new record, or at least potentially need a new record. You can't short-circuit that process.
And I would agree if what you're driving at is that the determination of benefits should be, the remedy should be remand to the district court rather than determination of benefits by this court. I would absolutely agree with that. If a de novo standard of review applies, I would argue that there's sufficient evidence and it should be upheld under a de novo standard. Obviously, not to undercut that argument, I would agree that remand is the proper remedy in this case if a de novo standard of review applies. Back to my point that an arbitrary and capricious standard of review should apply, and I recognize your point, Judge. I think that...
Hertzberger certainly began by saying the issue we have to consider is whether, and then it quotes the kind of language that's in this policy, authorizes deferential review, and it gave an unambiguous negative answer.
Right. And I would say that under Hertzberger, under Donato, under Bailey, I think that the terminology or the phrase "we may request," we may meaning we may not, we've got discretion to whether to request this information or not from you. We may request that you send proof of continuing disability satisfactory to Prudential, indicating that you are under the regular care of a doctor.
Yes, let me put it this way. For de novo versus deferential review, the question is whether satisfactory to Prudential implies a power of discretion on top of the plan, or whether it says that satisfies Prudential that the requirements of the plan have been met. There are two ways to read it. If we read it as saying that satisfies Prudential that the requirements of the plan have been met, there's no deference. I mean, there's no discretion implied, and therefore no deference.
Right.
And what I understood Hertzberger to be doing is saying, unless there's more in the plan, we read a phrase like satisfactory to us as meaning the former, in my way of putting it, rather than the latter. And is there anything in this plan which suggests that satisfactory to us means stuff we find as meeting the plan's requirements as opposed to gives us authority to change, alter, or have discretion in interpreting the plan's requirements?
Well, I think that the two phrases read, the phrase that my former counsel picked up on, and I can't speak to what was in his mind, but obviously he thought that was sufficient to convey discretion, but that that language that was found under the definition of disability, which basically said you are disabled when Prudential determines that you...
That doesn't get us very far.
That's right, in Hertzberger.
You know, this plan was adopted after Hertzberger. Prudential is a big company. Why didn't Prudential or the employer, if they wanted to establish a system of deference, why didn't they use the safe harbor language that we gave in Hertzberger?
If
you copy out language that this circuit has already said leads to non-deferential review, you should expect to get non-deferential review.
I understand that, and I can't speak for what was in the mind of Prudential either.
They didn't want to set up a system of deferential review, right? You know, these promises are worth more to employees if the administrator of the plan is really going to be held to its terms. They're worth less if the plan is full of weaselly language that says, well, you know, maybe we'll give you the benefits, maybe we won't. And employers that want to promise the maximum benefits to their employees will provide for non-deferential review. And that may be exactly what's going on here.
It may.
But
it
then
may
you don't want to weasel out ex post.
It may also be that they figured that their plan language met the requirements that was set forth.
But if they figured that, it means they weren't well counseled.
Possibly.
We won't pursue that, shall we?
No.
I'm sure Ms. Rothman didn't write the plan. So I said I'm sure Ms. Rothman didn't write the plan
sure
or won't admit to it today.
I did not.
We don't know who did.
Just wrapping
big
up.
Big ERISA departments at law firms that should have reviewed this plan.
Wrapping up briefly with respect to, I just wanted to comment on a case that was raised in the reply, Flores case, and I apologize, I don't have the citation. I believe it was a California case that was raised in the reply. I'd like to distinguish that case and just point out that the plan language in that case and this case is not identical. In that case, the plan language was found in a section titled Termination of Benefits. Here it's under an initial benefit determination, basically noting what you need to prove your claim in the first instance. And the other thing that I'd like to point out is the Flores Court, the district court in that case specifically, noted that other circuits had found the same language, specifically the language that we're speaking of here, to convey discretion. And in coming to that conclusion, they cited the Donato case from the Seventh Circuit as well. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Rothman. Anything further, Mr. Dabosky?
The Hertzberger case also involved Prudential. The companion case was Johnson versus Prudential, which had exactly the language that Prudential tried to argue to the district court justified a deferential standard of review, and it was rejected in Hertzberger. It's now been 5 years since Hertzberger, and they have not adopted the safe harbor language. Your Honor, Judge Easterbrook, you made an important point during counsel's argument about the scope of the record that I neglected to mention, perhaps because I wasn't clear on the meaning of the questions that was asked of me. If the de novo standard of review applies, it will allow the district court to consider the Social Security determination, Dr. Kramer's report.
I can't see what value the Social Security determination has. There are different legal standards. And indeed, that's why the Supreme Court has held that you can't infer from, say, the grant of Social Security disability benefits that a person is disabled for purposes of the ADA. They're all going back and forth, just doesn't help us very much with different legal standards.
By no means am I arguing that it's conclusive, but this court has recognized that the Social Security determination is relevant evidence. It's just merely...
Do you have any other medical evidence that you would want to introduce in the district court that was not in the administrative file?
Dr. Kramer's report, which diagnosed a failed back syndrome, which shows that the back surgery was not successful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.